Hello. My name is Stephanie Jackson. I am the Assistant Director of Advising and Professional Development at the Sam Nunn School of International Affairs at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, my name is Amy DeYounger. I'm the Associate Director of Undergraduate Studies and a faculty member in the School of History and Sociology at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia as well. This is our Nakata StoryCorps interview.
Yes, it is.
Okay, Stephanie.
Yes.
I'm going to start by asking you, is there anything you wish more people understood about academic advising?
Great question, Amy. I think that people should understand that academic advising is a relationship. It is not prescriptive. I'm not here to tell students what to do. I'm here to guide, to offer assistance, to serve as a coach as they navigate college. I want to encourage them. I want them to think critically about the goals they aspire to achieve, and I want to then help them achieve those goals. Years ago, I attended a Nakata seminar or a workshop, and there was this notion that was advanced that advising is teaching. And so by that, it meant that advising is more meaningful when treated as a teaching process than as a product. So to know me is to know that I have resisted teaching quite a bit in my career. But advising and teaching share similar qualities. So I want to help students increase their knowledge about the world that they live in. I want them to think critically and make informed decisions. I want them to develop problem-solving abilities and to make connections between the ideas that they are formulating, the subjects that they are studying, and the potential for their personal and professional development. So I want people to understand that advising is a collaborative relationship with designs on promoting college success, that the students and I have a shared responsibility and a desire for them to make informed choices. So when we engage students to consider other views and perspectives, we can still acknowledge their individuality, their values, and their motivations, and then that relationship becomes less abstract and more concrete.
Thank you. That response really resonates with me, especially the part about advising as teaching.
Yes. Yes, because that is one of your roles. So let me ask you a question now, Amy. Tell me a story about yourself that you'd like to tell students. What do you hope students will take from that story?
Well, I have a story that I like to share, particularly at our first year student orientation, when we have a large group of nervous students who, some of whom know exactly what they want to be when they grow up, and some of whom have absolutely no idea. And so I offer this both as a point of reassurance, but also as a way to share how important academic advising can be in helping them understand themselves and understanding what they want to do with their careers and with their lives. I was an undergraduate student at the College of William and Mary, and I was an English major, which was, as I always joke, the most logical choice of major for my selected career to be an obstetrician. So I was randomly assigned an academic advisor who happened to be the chair of the Department of Sociology at the time, and he was a really nice guy, very helpful, but he was a faculty advisor who didn't know that much about English and didn't know that much about obstetrics. But he was an amazing sociologist, and I knew I needed to take some social science classes. So he also quickly realized that I had a lot of interest in issues about things like race and class and gender and inequality, and saw that sociology, as a sociologist, that sociology speaks to those things. So he said, why don't you go ahead and, you know, I'm your advisor, and I'll show you where these classes will fit into your requirements for your degree, but these might also pique your intellectual interest. So he directed me to some courses to take in sociology, and I got hooked. And in fact, it led me to declare sociology as a second minor. So I did keep my English, second major. I did keep my English major. But then I went on and got a master's and PhD in sociology. So he was, in his role as academic advisor, he recognized in me what my interests were, not just in terms of these are the career outcomes that I want, but this is what I'm passionate about knowing more about. And he was able to steer me in that direction. And I hope that students get from that story a few things. First, I hope that they get that they should be flexible, mm-hmm. and that they should be open to trying new things, learning new things, exploring their passions, even if they don't see it at first immediately tied to a concrete career outcome. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm neither an English teacher involved in journalism or an obstetrician. And I also I want them to realize the value of academic advising, not just as you talked about in its prescriptive qualities, which are important and we have to be accurate and helpful in that way, but also in thinking about students in a more holistic way. And so I offer that story, particularly during orientation, to communicate those messages to students.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Amy.
All right. So let's think
next
about
question.
Yes, let's think about how our students see us. And I want to ask you, how would you like your students, your advisees, to remember you?
The one, not just the one thing, but one important thing I want my students to take away from that relationship that I talked about earlier with me is that I am an advocate for their professional development. So I realize that, you know, they may or may not be well served in this area in particular by other units. But if they come to me for help, they will get the advice or the suggestions or the recommendations and the coaching that they need to help advance their careers. So increasingly, we have seen that career advising has become a part of academic advising, and that is a concept that I embrace. I am a global career development facilitator and a certified career services provider. So working with students on their career readiness, that is their competencies to navigate the workplace, or their internship or job search, that process, or even exploring their career paths and the options that they might have, that is really the most exciting part of the work that I do. So I get a lot of joy in seeing them land those competitive positions or those prestigious fellowships or scholarships to do a year abroad or to do something, a work abroad. So I get a lot of joy from that, and I hope that they take away some advice or some tips that I have shared that will be useful to them throughout their professional careers.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And from my conversation with students, and we do have some overlapping students, mm-hmm. They are remembering you that way.
Sure,
they do say
know.
Those wonderful things about you, especially your career acumen.
Yeah, that's an area that,
advising.
That you know, I kind of take that personal because I really want to see them succeed, particularly for the discipline that I work with.
Sure.
Because that's the background that I have, and we'll talk a little bit about that later, but I'm familiar with where they are.
Yeah.
And so I really want to see them do well. Okay, so Amy, now I would like for you to tell me, what is the greatest reward or benefit that you have experienced as a faculty member who also advises?
Well, that is a great question. There's a lot of sort of conflicting scholarship on the notion of faculty members as advisors versus professional advisors. In different roles I've had on this campus and looking at different roles on other campuses, mm-hmm. Faculty advising can be a tremendous asset, and sometimes faculty advising can also mm-hmm. be a little bit disastrous, mm-hmm. and it really depends on the context of the university. Georgia Tech is a research one university, and so the expectation of the faculty here is that they are engaged in their research. I am a non-tenure track faculty member, so I don't have that same pressure, mm-hmm. but I do have, I am teaching and in the classroom and running an undergraduate program, so I do have these competing things that are competing for my time and my attention. But I find that being an academic advisor only enhances those things.
Right.
What I get as an advisor, that perhaps teachers who only, faculty who only interact with students in the classroom is I really get to know students on a much deeper and different level. Mm-hmm. Professors in the classroom see just a small segment of their students' lives, usually directly related to that particular course. Sometimes faculty get to have students over multiple semesters and develop a deeper relationship, but that's really what I get as an academic advisor, and you spoke eloquently to that about academic advising as teaching, mm-hmm. and so I can extend that into my advising sessions. And it's particularly fun when I have students who are in my class, mm-hmm. and then I am also their academic advisor. Mm-hmm. So I get to know them on a much deeper level intellectually in the classroom, but also personally, and that helps me understand them in a way that I think if I were just teaching, I would never get the benefit of doing that. And so I think that is an argument for, in the appropriate context and the appropriate places, for involving faculty in academic advising, because it really gives them a better understanding of who they're teaching, mm-hmm. and why they're teaching what they're teaching. So it's really been a great reward to me to be able to cross those boundaries between teaching and advising.
And you do that so well. You've been rewarded here at the institute level as well as at the national level for your work as an advisor. So I think that's really great, Amy.
Thank you. Okay, Stephanie, so the next thing I want to ask is a question I think that's great for both of us to answer, because sure. our trajectories have been different and interesting. So I will start out by asking you, how has your career been different than perhaps what you imagined when you first finished school?
Wow, that's a really good question. I don't tell this story too much, but I think it's important that, you know, people know this about me, and maybe it also helps understand why I'm so passionate about the things that I am passionate about within regards to advising. So I finished my undergraduate career at Howard University in Washington, D.C. I had a degree in political science and a minor in economics. From there, I went on to graduate school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, where I got a graduate degree in international affairs, international development studies. So when I went to school, you know, one of the questions I was always asked as a young person, what do you want to be when you grow up? I wanted to be different. I wanted the different answer. I didn't want to say a lawyer or a teacher or whatever, an astronaut. I told everybody I wanted to be an ambassador. So I had an interest in things that were going on in the world outside of the U.S. So I had that in mind when I went to college. And then I got an internship on Capitol Hill working for my local congressional representative. And that is where I discovered that I greatly disliked politics. And so that ambassador thing, that wasn't going to happen. But I wanted to figure out, were there other ways for me to do work internationally? So, you know, in between the time I graduated from undergrad and went to grad school, I worked with a couple of internationally based offices that were in Washington, D.C. So I did some temp work with the Washington Office on Africa, with the World Bank, the Africa Policy Information System. And I got a feel for what working with international organizations was like. So after grad school, I started my career with Amnesty International, then I moved on to Peace Corps, backstopping their Central America programs. But at that point, I decided I wanted a little bit more nonprofit experience to get away from the federal experience and try something in the nonprofit world, where I moved on to the Points of Light Foundation. And it was there that I learned through a training program offered by the Corporation for National and Community Service that I really had an interest in doing more than just working at this nonprofit organization. There was something else that was calling to me, but I just didn't realize what that was. Informally, on the side, I had been helping people find ways to get abroad for years. I was the person they contacted. They always said, find Stephanie. She can tell you about this language program that will help you study Portuguese in Brazil. Or find Stephanie. She'll tell you about this grant where you can learn how to be a Spanish teacher while you're living in Madrid. So people were coming to me informally to learn about these opportunities abroad. So I needed to figure out, how could I get paid for this? I wanted to make a living doing this because this is work that I really enjoy. So while I was at this organization, I learned about the concept or the notion or the field of international education. But for far too long, I avoided it because I thought that that solely meant teaching. And as I mentioned earlier, I did not want to be a teacher. I knew that. I did not want to be a teacher. But by avoiding it, it took me a longer time to get into this field because I just didn't want to do that. But later on, I learned that international education involved more than just teaching, that it was a way to help people get interconnected throughout this world. And so there was a division within international education called education abroad that greatly appealed to me. So my career path switched at that point, and I moved to Georgia. I got involved with the local Association of International Educators. I became a trainer with their global leadership program. And eventually, I got hired on here at Georgia Tech in the School of International Affairs. And my job at that time was to help people get involved in what was called the International Plan, which was a degree designator program to help our students get abroad. So I found that way to do the work that I'm passionate about and that I really like to do, even though it took me a few steps and a few misunderstandings along the way. But I found myself in this field, and I'm able to engage in that passion of helping people find opportunities abroad as a way to develop themselves personally or professionally, and also to help the world understand the diversity that makes up America. So that is really one of the goals that I am most proud of, being able to help people explore the world and help the world to see what America is really all about as well. So it is certainly different than I had imagined, but it certainly is rewarding.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
I love that story.
So you want to tell me now, Amy, how has your career been different than what you imagined?
Yeah, so I think my story is a little bit about challenges and opportunities, or dare I say disappointments mm-hmm. and opportunities, mm-hmm. but that's okay. So after I graduated from William & Mary, and I had these two undergraduate degrees in English and in sociology, and I was sort of thinking of three trajectories. One of them was getting a PhD in English and going into academia in English. One of them was getting a PhD in sociology and going into academia in sociology, and the other was going to law school.
Hmm.
I was really intimidated by the LSATs, which was too bad because later in life I took a practice test a few times and scored in the top 2% of all of the LSAT scores.
Hey, wow.
So I kind of chickened out of law school, mm-hmm. and that was a moment where I learned, you know what, you just got to go for it.
Yeah.
But I decided that academia did appeal to me, that I like teaching, and that sociology really is a discipline that addresses all of the things I'm most passionate about, the issues that concern me. So I went, I got my master's degree and my PhD at Duke University in the Department of Sociology. I also got a graduate certificate in women's studies at Duke University. And Duke is a research one university, and what they really do is train their graduate students to go on to become faculty members at research one universities, meaning more research, mm-hmm. minimal teaching, and mm-hmm. publishing a whole lot.
Right.
I got very brief exposure to teaching in graduate school, and it was actually completely coincidental and quite sad because a faculty member 1 week into a semester was diagnosed with cancer, and I had to step into his mm-hmm. role as an instructor. I was 25 years old. I looked about 10 at the time and had to step into his class, which had already been going on for a week with a full classroom, and be the professor. And that went on for a few semesters, and really that was my only exposure to teaching because my graduate program was really focused on research. And I was very interested in research.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagined my career as a tenure-track faculty member at a Research One university, and indeed my first job was at Emory University as a tenure-track faculty member. Emory is a great institute. I very much enjoyed my time there. I was there for 6 years, but I did not get tenure. Part of the reason, or the reason I did not get tenure, is because my publication record was not as strong as it needed to be, and part of the reason that was the case is because I discovered how much I loved teaching, mm-hmm. mentoring, and working with students. And at a Research One university, while there are amazing teachers to be found, we have them here at Georgia Tech, we had them at Emory, that is not the basis of why you were there. And so it was very devastating. It was not unexpected, but it was very devastating to not get tenure. Although my department at Emory was wonderful about the process. I mean, they couldn't give me tenure just because they liked me, but everyone was very gracious and supportive even as I exited out of that position.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved into a non-tenure track academic role that was kind of all over the place in the School of History and Sociology. It wasn't really well defined. I'm in a category called academic professionals, which are, we are the non-tenure track faculty at Georgia Tech, and academic professionals do a little bit of absolutely everything you can imagine at Georgia Tech. I'm now a senior academic professional, so I'm not tenured, but I'm kind of as close to as tenure as you can get as a non-tenure track faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in and was immediately given about 15 different hats to wear that range from you know, fixing the copier to huge decisions about academic policy. And what it's done is given me, despite the disappointment and having to let go of what I thought was going to be, this role here at Georgia Tech has given me more and different avenues to pursue. And it's really given me a newfound appreciation and enjoyment for things that I didn't think I would enjoy because I had never been exposed to them. I really hadn't thought about the process of academic policy making and academic administration in graduate school and as a faculty member. Administration was something that, you know, and policy was stuff that was in your way.
Right.
And on this side of things, I see the value and importance of good policy and good administrators and good administration. So my career has definitely been different than what I imagined when I had my PhD at the ripe old age of 27.
Mm-hmm.
But it has involved some disappointment and letting go of the academic that I thought I would be, but I've moved into a fantastic new avenue that allows me to be a teacher, to work with students, to mentor, to bring that teaching into the advising role, and also to do some administrative things and policy making things that I have come to really enjoy and appreciate and see that they are really important for facilitating great academic advising, mm-hmm. and great teaching. So it's all been good. It's all been a learning process, but it's been good.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Amy. It has been a pleasure to share with you, StoryCorps, our perspectives and our reflections on academic advising. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Are you sure you finished recording?